Next up on Off Duty, a romance with Basque cuisine.
Helping you enjoy the finer points of food and drink. This is Off Duty from the Wall Street Journal.
Hello, and welcome to the Off Duty podcast, where we talk about food and drink, and sometimes even love. I'm Beth Cracklauer.
And I'm Kevin Sintemong.
You know, for years, Kevin, one of my favorite restaurants in New York has been a place in Chelsea called Chiquito.
Yes, it's a great one. I'm highly in favor of restaurants where the eating and drinking are on equal footing.
It's so true. They do have a terrific list of wines and beers and ciders and cocktails at Chiquito. And to go with it, a menu of pinchos, which are sort of the Basque equivalent of tapas, but are really actually so much more. And beyond that, Chiquito introduced really a whole way of eating to New York City and a whole lot of New Yorkers to the cooking of the Basque country in Spain. Now they've put together a cookbook called The Basque Book, a love letter and recipes from the kitchen of Chiquito, and chef author Alexander Reich is here to talk to us about it today. Welcome.
Thank you for having me. Such a nice introduction.
Oh, great. Well, we're really genuinely happy you're here. I love the book, and both that book and Chiquito really are, and I mean, I hate to keep punning on this, but it's irresistible, labors of love, literally. Your husband was your partner in the creation of both of them.
That's true. That's true. And the inception of both of them as well. Yeah. Yeah, we do it together. I do most of the talking for some reason. It works out that way.
So, would it be accurate to say that you fell in love with your husband and with Basque cooking simultaneously?
Yes. I mean, that is absolutely what happens. And spontaneously,
yeah,
all at once and quite quickly.
So what drew you to Basque cooking initially?
Ambition initially, because I really wanted to go to Spain and cook, and I thought it would be useful to me to take a job in a purportedly Basque restaurant opening up and. On Hudson Street, and my husband had been recruited to help open that restaurant.
Let's just say what his name is. We have it.
Oh,
yet.
His name is Eder Montero. Yeah, Eder Montero.
And you and Eder met you were cooking together at a restaurant.
Yeah, I was cooking for him, really. I mean, he was my boss. And he came here to open this restaurant with another Basque chef. And I thought that they would sort of write my ticket to go cook in Spain.
Uh-huh. But here you are, still in New York.
I know. I never did cook in Spain.
There's so many different regional cuisines in Spain. What would you say? How would you define Basque as distinct from the rest of them?
Well, I mean, it is for me. It's sort of the most distinctive. I mean, it may not sort of read the most exotic to Americans. Because the ingredients feel sort of familiar and approachable. But all the other cuisines, I feel like in Spain, or most of them, are Mediterranean cuisines, and they really feel that way. Mm-hmm. And I think that the Basque cuisine sort of sticks out. I think, like, its landscape and the people, they're just something that's other. And it's not a Mediterranean cuisine. It has... incorporates like ingredients that are comfortable in the Mediterranean vernacular, but mm-hmm. it just doesn't, it's much more like sort of plain and austere. I mean, I hesitate to call it rustic because I feel like rustic sometimes feels like sloppy, mm-hmm. And it's a very precise kind of cuisine. But it does feel different.
When Chiquito opened, did you feel like people in New York were already pretty informed about this cuisine, or did you feel like you had to do some education?
They were not informed about the cuisine or about the language, because I got a lot. I mean, it's funny, like a lot of people talk about Chocoli now, which is this like, you know, very sort of popular Basque wine, but they call the restaurant Texaco and Tuxedo and like all this stuff. And people don't do that anymore. And they would never say that about like the word pinchos. So, I mean, while I never felt like it was my job to educate or to even just be provocative, I really just want to please people. That's what I do for a living. But I also want to entrust myself in what I do and be engaged. And to me, Chiquito was, I mean, our restaurant was, you know, 650 square feet. It was Chiquito, which means small in Basque. And also in Spanish, though spelled differently. And Chiquito is a small glass of wine that you have in the Basque country with a pincho, which also, and there's just a lot of TXs in the language. And since the Basque people define themselves as somebody who speaks the Basque language, to me, it was important to have like the everything that was distinctive about the Basque country in that restaurant. And so while I didn't think that it was our job to educate, I did feel like I wanted to tell the truth about this place that I thought was really special. And we definitely, we started out making like sort of multi-regional tapas restaurants, and we wanted to go from like more general to specific and eventually, you know, open a restaurant that was particular.
Yeah, you do have a few other restaurants in New York. There's El Quinto Pino right around the corner from Chiquito, and La Vara in Brooklyn. And each one has a very distinct identity from the other ones. But how did you decide that this book would focus on Chiquito and Basque cooking?
I wanted to write. I felt like there was, well, we had been doing this for a long time, and I feel very comfortable in the cuisine, and I feel confident in my understanding of it and our projection of it. And so I felt ready and mature enough to write the book. And then I also sensed that there was like this palpable interest in wanting to sort of define and understand and cook in the Basque tradition from others. They people were ready to have a Basque book and interested in the subject. And I wanted to be the one to write it. I mean, quite frankly, like I'm a big consumer of books and I love them. And I wanted to make sure that if there was going to be a current Basque book, it was going to be written by somebody who cared as much as we do about it being like truthful and authentic.
Well, I think that really comes across. The confidence of just the way that you've organized the book, I think, is so interesting. This isn't just like the typical chapter on breakfast, chapter on lunch, chapter on dinner. There is a chapter on pinchos, but beyond that, there's, you know, there's a whole chapter on eggs, and then there's a chapter on vegetables and another one on cod. How did you decide to set it up that way? Why was that the best way to tell the story?
The Basque language is what they call like an agglutinating language, like where you just keep adding on endings and words, and it all kind of sort of snowballs into this one meaningful thing. And the food's not really that different. So it was difficult for me to figure out how to, I wanted to be able to convey how the book was different. It has very plain ingredients in it, but I wanted somehow to convey that the way that they, that it was more than the sum of its parts, and the way these things all come together are what make it so unique. And so it was a bit of a puzzle to figure out the relationship of these ingredients to each other, to the landscape, to the time of day that you would consume them. And initially, you know, I was going to do a chapter on salt and a chapter on oil and a chapter, and all those things made sense until I started to pull the recipes together. And then I couldn't decide sometimes whether a particular recipe belonged in the oil chapter or in the salt chapter. There's a lot of overlap, but I really wanted to sort of break it down into more than just like the mother sauces or, you know, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, because they also eat very differently than us. You know, they have things that we would, you know, normally have for breakfast, for dinner, and things that we would have for dinner at lunchtime or at 11 in the morning. So it made sense to not have it be super conventional, but still sort of reflect sort of what and how they eat.
There's a great chapter that sort of focuses on vegetables and the use of vegetables. It's called huerta. What does that word mean, huerta?
Huerta's like a little like garden, and usually in these kinds of gardens, it's kind of like made for a family or a couple families to share, and you would just grow what you needed there, or a mixture of what you needed and what you like, and with the intent often to share and trade with others. So a lot of times, it's more than a kitchen garden. But it's pretty small. And I mean, the plots are pretty small in the Basque Country because the land is not, it's kind of poor, you know, like we look at it and we're like, oh, the riches of the Basque Country. But really it's what they don't have that really defines the cuisine. And also the personality, like they're just so persistent, you know, like if they have bad land, they're going to turn that land upside down and go to the bottom of the hill to bring like, you know, stones and drainage and dirt up the hill until they can have that little garden that is like sort of a subsistence kind of garden. And there you will see not like the crazy variety of things, but just like everything is very intentional. Like the lettuce that they choose is like the lettuce that you see all over the Basque Country, or that, you know, the onions are very specific.
Well, you know, that idea of simplicity you're talking about and kind of making the most out of the ingredients you have, there's this one recipe in there that I think really kind of embodies that. It's for Eder's avocado salad. It couldn't be simpler. It's just like avocado, paprika, vinegar, oil, and salt. But at the same time, like a lot of care goes into the making of it. It's a proper recipe. You talk about actually at one point in the book, I remember that simple isn't the same thing as easy.
Right.
Can you talk a little bit about that recipe and how it came about?
Yeah, that recipe came about because somebody as a gift left a bottle of chocolatey vinegar at Chiquito. And for years, you know, we have been imitating and finding substitutions for things that we couldn't get a hold of. And it, for some reason, it seemed very crazy that suddenly you can have chocolatey vinegar in New York. You know, like we've been like hacking all this stuff for so long. And so that vinegar came to the restaurant, and like a lot of precious things that like sort of come through the door, we brought it home. And and we don't cook a lot at home. We're super busy. And when we do, it feels like a little bit either really special or the opposite of really special, like very necessary. And so that bottle of vinegar sat on the counter one day at our, just like, we had a lot of avocados. We had little kids, and at the time they were eating avocados, which, you know, changes depending on the day of the week. And so we would get these like great bags, whole bags of organic avocados, and we would be eating them quite frequently. And just then also his aunt had sent us our like sort of annual stash of Riojan paprika, which, I mean, a lot of people get pimentón de la Vera and it's very good, but this particular paprika that she sends us every year, it's like, it's just a remarkable pimentón, mostly because it's just not as smoky and as intense as the pimentón de la Vera. It's just like a little more delicate and subtle, but still has that smokiness. And he put it on there, and he put some oil on it, and he put that vinegar on it, and it was just, it was gorgeous. Like, it just physically was beautiful, and it was just so, so delicious.
It's funny, you know,
made
that
me
it's
fall
kind
in
of,
love with him again.
It's become this cliche, like, something's more than the sum of its parts, but
yeah.
This seems like a situation where that's really true. You also, this week in the off-duty section, Kathy Squires wrote a really interesting. She kind of pulled a bunch of lessons from the book about how salt is used in Basque cuisine. It's more than just a seasoning, it sounds like.
It's true. And in fact, a lot of other things that are salty are used as a seasoning in Basque cooking that aren't specifically salt. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of use of salt, obviously, not the least of which is preserving salt cod, which renders it sort of inedible and unspoilable. And so then you have to kind of bring it back to life. And then obviously curing anchovies and baking in a salt crust is common. And we do a lot of brining and adobos.
Yeah, there's that great pork loin where you kind of rub it with the salt. And then you take the salt off, and then you do a second rub with paprika. What is the salt achieving in the meat in that first step?
It's definitely seasoning it, but it's also drawing a lot of water out of it, so it kind of concentrates the flavor. And, you know, lomo and adobo, or, paprika cured pork loin like that, super common at, like, every grocery store in the Basque Country. Like, not everybody makes it themselves. They go and they buy the lomo already in adobo, and it's like a semi-cured product mm-hmm. that you would buy. You can buy it in a butcher shop, but also sometimes at charcuterie stores or stores that specialize in like much more cured meats. Mm-hmm. And people take it home and they slice it thin. They fry it in a pan, kind of a la Canadian bacon or kind of fresh bacon. Like,
did you feel like learning to cook this food was akin to learning a whole new language?
I never thought of it that way. Yes, many times over, but I also felt like I had an advantage, and I mean, tragically in a way, right? Because the Basques had their own language, and then they were forced to speak another language,
right.
and adapt. And the language that you know they were forced to speak, you know, happened to be my parents' language. So I had a definitely like a window into to Basque cooking from my Argentine roots. And that was a tremendous advantage for me. I mean, I walked into like a Basque kitchen, but they were speaking Spanish in that kitchen. And so in a way it was like cooking, you know, Basque food or cooking Spanish food to me was like sort of a return to living in my original language. My husband's a Basque speaker, and he's sort of the first generation of young people in the 70s who were educated in Basque. But no, I think, you know, kitchen vocabulary, like I was comfortable with it. I had to learn some new names for tools and uh-huh. and things.
Yeah.
But I think, I mean, maybe it wouldn't have felt as deep to me. Maybe I would have ended up on a much more superficial plane if I hadn't spoken the language. It very narrowed things down for me in a way that I found very both exciting and disciplined. Like I just, it's such a simple but compelling cuisine. I just think if it catches you at the right time in your life, like it's really provocative. It might seem too plain to somebody who isn't patient, you know, patient with food, because they'll want to throw a lot of stuff at it that doesn't really belong in it and won't like maintain its identity, you know.
Well, I feel like, I mean, looking through this book, and I've just started cooking from it, it really has taught me so much. And I feel like there's some really interesting technique going on here. And you've provided a really incredible introduction for the rest of us to this food in the Basque book. It comes out officially on April 19th from 10 Speed Press. I've learned a lot from it, like I said, and you should definitely get a copy. Thank you for taking the time to stop in and talk to us today, Alex.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I'm delighted to be here.
Yeah, this is great. And that's a wrap for another Off Duty podcast. You can find lots of other podcasts online at wsj.com/podcast and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and now Spotify. We're here every week talking about all things food and drink related. And if you like what you hear, tell a friend.